Welcome to iPad Pros, the show all about using your iPad to be productive and get work done. I'm Tim Chen, host of the show.
The phenomenal thing is that I could really easily bring all these drawings, all these pictures into the Swift playgrounds, and it wasn't really a problem.
Welcome back to another episode of iPad Pros. We are joined in this episode by Martin Wolski. Martin comes to the iPad as the computer he used to learn Swift, and in this episode, we discuss that journey of learning Swift on the iPad. He's a year into learning Swift, so this is kind of the beginner state of learning the code, and I think his perspective from someone new to coding will be very helpful for those that are also looking to get into coding themselves. As a reminder, you can support this podcast over at patreon.com/iPadPros or by subscribing in Apple Podcasts. My great thanks to everyone that supports the show. And by supporting iPad Pros, you'll also get early access to my other podcast, Vision Pros. With that, here's my discussion with Martin. Enjoy. Welcome to the podcast, Martin.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm very excited for this chat because as we're going to get into, this is all about learning to write Swift, which I've done several times, at least starting to, and never quite finishing. So I'm eager to learn more about your journey here.
I think so.
So before we dive into it, can you share a bit on your background and what your current iPad setup is?
Okay. My name is Martin Wolski. I'm a self-taught hobbyist programmer. And maybe to set some expectations, I should say I only started coding a year ago, I guess. So mm-hmm. To describe myself more broadly, I'm a human interested in how the tech products evolve. I'm also a cognitive science student, so I try to understand the creepy stuff about how the mind works, how do we perceive the world, and why mind works the way it works. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Very cool.
And iPad is a big part of all these things. So.
Yeah.
That's great.
What is your current iPad setup?
It's an iPad from 2021.
Okay.
It's a base model. So like many students, I got the device alongside Apple Pencil for note-taking.
Yep.
Right? So, well, it couldn't stop there, right? So it's an iPad.
Yes. And do you hook it up with any kind of keyboard, or do you just use a standalone with the pencil?
I may surprise you, but I don't really have any keyboard, any trackpad. I'm absolutely without any accessories.
That's fascinating, as we'll talk about with like coding, because I know TechCentury is a big part of that. Yeah.
Let me say, I wouldn't really recommend it. You will be better with keyboard and trackpad.
Yeah, the autocomplete will help out quite a bit in that scenario, I'd imagine.
That's right? True. That's true. Yeah.
So before we dive into Swift, I'm curious, what are some of your favorite iPad apps that you currently use these days?
I use iPad for many things in my life. For example, for school, I use Files. It's a really great place to manage your assignments, manage your files, your readings for classes. I love the synchronization between devices, the iCloud Drive. It's really nice in this area. I also like Freeform a lot. It allows me to make mind maps. It's not the best tool for the job, but it's free.
Yes.
you can do really, really, really different things in free form, but I use it for mind mapping, and it's good enough, let's say. Let's put it that way.
Do you tend to do a different free form per every like class, or how often do you create new freeforms?
I create a new, I guess it's called board, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I create a board for every topic. So If I'm interested in brain imagining, I create a board specifically for this topic, right? So
yeah.
It's really easy to search, to browse all the boards.
Very cool. Yeah. And what are your kind of general thoughts regarding the iPad? Like, as a student, it's probably a pretty nice tool as your kind of mobile computer, I'd imagine.
Yes, I use it mainly for note-taking. And that's actually why I bought an iPad, right? I got it in high school since I really struggled with my notebook. There was more and more notebooks, and I couldn't really manage that amount of notebooks. So I decided to buy iPad strictly for note taking. And I think it was a great device for this purpose, but I didn't finish at note taking.
And so these days, you also added a Mac to your kind of computing lineup with the Mac Mini. So for the iPad, it's mainly used kind of in class and when you're not at your kind of office kind of setup.
That's right. I use it in class. I use it also in home for reading what are the announcements, what are the news from the university. So if there's an event, I can easily open the reader app, the RSS app to catch up with the latest announcements. But it's really a school and media consumption device, yeah, right? So it's great for reading, it's great for note taking, and that's actually what I do for the majority of time on iPad.
Okay. Yeah. And do you have any favorite aspects of the iPad as a platform, either hardware or OS level wise?
Well, so my favorite aspect of iPad is its versatility, right? So you can do really a lot of things on iPad. You can read stuff. You can do creative stuff. You can do productive stuff. You won't find such a diverse set of apps on Mac, right? So you probably won't read things on Mac. You probably won't draw drawings on you probably won't draw on Mac. You won't draw on iPhone. So it's exclusively available on iPad, and I think iPad is a great computer. If you had to choose only one, iPad is a great choice.
Yeah, the versatility is really, it kind of morphs into what you need, which is part of what I love about it. Like right now, I have my iPad set up kind of like a desktop computer, where you're on one screen as a FaceTime feed, and then I have my external monitor and keyboard and trackpad hooked up, and it feels like I'm on a little dumbed down Mac with all the screen real estate of that too.
That's great. I have to admit, I'm not that brave. I have some concerns if it could everything I would expect from my computer, right?
Right. So, and it does not run Xcode as you.
Yes, that's the main thing. I actually bought Mac. I really needed Xcode to push my learning forward. I mean, I really. Maybe let's not mix the questions, right?
Yes, we will dive.
I will wait.
We will dive into when the Mac became a necessary tool for developing for you. But yeah, let's jump into development. So Swift Playgrounds is kind of the foundation of a lot of this. So for those that haven't tried Swift Playgrounds, don't know what it is exactly, can you kind of give us a kind of baseline of what that app is?
Sure. Swift Playground is this free educational piece of software for iPad and Mac that essentially tries to accomplish two goals. The first one is to give you the space for writing code, right? So the code editor. And the second one is to give you resources to learn Swift, give you the materials that you can learn from. But the thing is, it's not really a handbook and the editor as two individual features. And the way Playgrounds teaches is that it throws you at a real problem. So for example, they make a little puzzle game, right? So they break something in the puzzle, and they explain you the tools at your disposal, and you can then try them, see the results, and reiterate this. So that's a really cool way for teaching coding. I really love it.
Yeah, it definitely makes it approachable. Like, it's like almost like a game, which I just
that's right.
Love that
exactly.
Approach, yeah. So you were mentioning earlier you're about a year into learning how to write code. So would the assumption then also be that Swift, this was your very first experience learning the code, your first language, or did you have prior experience?
Not really. Swift is actually my latest try and the most successful try to learn coding, but it isn't the first one. I guess the first language, the first programming language I tried to learn was JavaScript, and it ended not great, let's put it this way, because JavaScript is really the main purpose of JavaScript is to make a web interactive, right? But for me, the learning curve is much higher than Swift. I also tried Python, and the problem was similar. The resources weren't that great, and I felt lost many times. And you can't really learn it by yourself, right? So it's quite a challenge, especially if that's your first programming language. But here we are with Swift, and I can probably say it's the best
like introductory language for someone new to this.
That's right. That's right.
And Apple loves to say that anyone can code. And I think part of the initiative with Swift Playgrounds for iPad is bringing coding to, you know, schools and people just getting into coding. Do you feel like Swift Playgrounds is accomplishing that? It's a good place to start for those that haven't coded before?
That's right. If you look at the Swift Playgrounds app, It definitely looks like an app for starting with programming. There is code editor and there are lessons, but the lessons are not purely theoretical documents that you read. There are more like a challenge, like a game. They are called playgrounds, right? So one of the playgrounds I would really recommend to listeners to try, even if you don't plan your programming career, I would recommend to try one of the playgrounds. It's called Get Started with Code, and I believe it's the first playground. It's the first challenge it throws out at you, so you can try yourself immediately, and you won't really feel you need to have some prior knowledge to start the lesson, because you really it's specifically built for newcomers.
And as you went through the different lessons, did you reach a point in learning Swift where you felt like you needed to go outside of playgrounds and seek out other resources and books or lessons from Swift teachers to continue on learning?
To tell you the truth, I made the get started with code challenge, and I was really surprised how well it was built and how much you can learn from the playground. But when I tried the next playgrounds, I felt more and more lost. I think part of the problem is that you don't really start building new apps or projects immediately. You rather Apple creates projects that the way other playgrounds work is that they are essentially unfinished apps. So you are the one who has to fix them or add new features. And the problem is that you have to make modifications to the app, right? But you don't really create the app, and it may overwhelm you because there's so much going on everywhere in the app, but you really modify only the one aspect of the project. So I wouldn't really recommend going with that route of learning with playgrounds from A to Z. Rather, I would start with the first playgrounds you can take, and then to switch to online materials.
And what are some of the ones that you found most helpful online as far as resources outside of playgrounds?
I would really, really recommend 100 Days of Swift UI from Paul Hudson. It's essentially a challenge for you to write Swift for 100 days. And I can say I really love the way Paul teaches, because he doesn't want to limit you to the theory, right? So in the course, you essentially create many, many apps, mini projects and every app requires you to really know a different part of Swift. So for one project, you may learn frameworks for machine learning, and the second requires you to learn how the MapKit works, right? So I really like how diverse the course is, because if you have tried some other courses for learning Python, for example, you may find that you essentially create a command line apps. I wouldn't really say even the word apps, because they are more like a sort of a command line program, right? So you won't probably really use the apps daily on your iPhone on iPad, but with Swift Playgrounds you can really create the app on your iPad, test on your iPad, show it, hand over it to someone from your family, and really check the results, right? Get some feedback.
Yeah, and it's all on device, which is great. So something about Swift is there's also Swift UI. How different is the underlying code of Swift versus the UI language of Swift UI? Is that something that Apple tries to help you learn both of those things pretty effectively?
The feeling I had after learning from playgrounds was that I know some Swift, I know some Swift UI, but I'm not really sure how to connect them, right? But you need both for great apps and for great products. So that's the aspect that was really polished. That was really polished by Paul Hudson in the 100 days of Swift UI, and when you do the course, you essentially you basically learn that the Swift UI views depend on the Swift UI views depend on Swift variables, right? So you, of course, you dive much, much more deeply into how Swift UI works, those are the basics.
And at what point did you feel like you need to graduate from the iPad to the Mac? Was there some kind of like point where maybe in the 100 Days of Swift lesson that you're like, oh, I can't do this? Or was it after that and you were like, I'm trying to write a Mac app or trying to do something that the iPad just couldn't handle?
So, like I said, I did. I was doing the 100 Days of Swift UI course, right? And for the majority of topics and technologies, I did really great with iPad, right? So I could create apps that made use of MapKit, for example, and many, many others frameworks, because of course in Swift Playgrounds you have access to many, many APIs, and there are limitations, but I think we may talk about this a bit later. But what really surprised me was that it wasn't a problem with Swift Playgrounds that it limited you to write some code, that there were some limitations, artificial limitations. It was the problem. The thing is that there are simply no GUIs for some things, and you cannot accomplish some goals. You cannot change some settings, for example, to run the app in the background, right? So there are obstacles. So you cannot do everything. You cannot configure core data schemas. You cannot create machine learning models with Create ML. Essentially, everything that depends on GUI in Xcode may be unavailable in Swift Playgrounds. But for majority of people, the things that Swift Playgrounds offers is more than enough to kick off and really get some fundamentals of programming, right? It's really more than enough.
Yeah. And I'm curious, are there any other apps on the iPad that you used as well to learn how to code, or was it all in Playgrounds?
Not really. I used YouTube and Safari for learning and from the 100 Days of Swift UI course, but you don't really need much to learn coding. It's only you, the code editor, the preview, and you can do LL, and you essentially have infinite possibilities. Yeah, so the only limiting factors are your ideas, your map, maybe for some apps you need map, but you really learn it with practice. You have problems, you need map, and it's a natural relation. So and these problems may actually show you that learning math can be a pleasure.
Yes. I was not a great math student back in the day, but if there was some application which was more fun, like coding, maybe that would have changed things a bit.
For many types of apps, you don't even really need math, right? So if you want to create, let's say an audio player for your music, right? So you don't really need that much of math. You can do amazing things with math. You can do amazing animations, transitions, but it's only a cherry on top of the cake.
Yeah.
in many cases.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier, you did this all with the virtual keyboard. How well does the Swift Playgrounds app like adapt the keyboard? Is there like, are there custom keyboards with like special things on it for coding, or is it just the standard keyboard you get within Swift Playgrounds?
Overall, if you are just starting with learning programming, you will be have a quite a good time with just touch input, right? Because there are many the virtual keyboard has auto suggestions, right? So you can really complete many tasks with just tapping on a line of code that is one tap away. When you switch to the full app editor, you may it may irritate you a bit more. So I really would I wouldn't repeat my decisions, and I would buy a keyboard. So if you can buy a quality keyboard for your iPad, and most iPads you can buy really great keyboards, I would really recommend it, because it's great to have that feeling under your fingers, right? So that's the way to go if you are creating semi-real apps.
So what apps were you working on developing when you felt like you needed to graduate to the Mac? What were the big limitations, and kind of what apps are you currently writing and working on?
I really started to notice the lack of Xcode features when during 100 days of Swift UI projects, like the project that made use of core data or create ML, and these were really interesting topics, and I really didn't want to skip them. But now with Swift data, you can do all the persistent storage the way you would do on core data. So it's less of a problem now. But the biggest limitation I really started to notice, I started to notice more and more with bigger projects, was the lack of Git integrations. It's essentially a tool for not breaking your work. So if you want to create a new feature, you want to refactor some things, these Git features are not there built in the Swift Playgrounds, unfortunately. So you can play with the third party apps for the Git, but it would be I would be really grateful for the integration in Swift Playgrounds directly.
Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you'd like to about kind of your journey in Swift and learning the code?
I would really emphasize the versatility of iPad. I can give you an example. I created an app for learning math, and I wanted to make it fun. So the way I did it, I drew some really fun pictures of animals and some I think it was a cage that's and the animals were trapped in the cage, and it was all done in I guess Procreate, I guess I'm right, and the phenomenal thing is that I could really easily bring all these drawings, all these pictures into the Swift Playgrounds, and it wasn't really a problem. I also use Vectornator, I guess it's called Linearity now, and it's great for creating some symbols, some icons. So and it's great with Apple Pencil. You can do really precise operations with the Apple Pencil. You can draw. And I didn't expect that Apple Pencil will be that good with vectors for creating vectors and graphics.
Yeah, that's awesome. And yeah, it goes right back to the versatility thing where you can actually touch the screen and interact with everything directly.
That's right. And another much welcomed addition to the Swift Playgrounds is that you can essentially code everywhere where you have, even when you don't have the conditions to put out the MacBook on the table and start coding, you can in many situations you can use iPad. So to give an example, I started my 100 days of SwiftUI challenge in the summer. And the summer is a perfect time for traveling, and I could easily take out the iPad even in car. And for example, I coded a really simple Pong game in the car. And the thing I love is that eventually, when you have some prototype, you can take the wheels off and really easily import the project to Xcode. So the integration is really seamless. So as you can see, it's great for some prototyping.
Yeah, like you can start on the iPad and then finish up and do all the...
That's right.
Yeah, the heavier work on the Mac.
Let me find a really, really great tip from Paul Hudson. Yeah, and it connects really nicely with the philosophy I learned from Paul Hudson. It's called make it work, make it right, make it fast, right? So the most important thing is to actually start even a very vague problem you don't know how to tackle, but you just start off where you can. So iPad is a great device for such experiments. You don't actually have to create whole apps. Apple Swift Playgrounds allows you to create, they are called books, and it's a feature that allows to test you some snippets of some small snippets of code. So for example, you write a function, you write some class, and you don't even have to, you actually don't have to code the rest of the app. You don't have to create menus. You don't have to create interface. You can focus specifically on the problem you want to solve with the Swift code.
That's really neat. And yeah, it seems like yeah, you create a bunch of snippets and have kind of a library of different snippets to work with in whatever project you're working
on. That's right.
Well, where can people follow you online? Any other places you'd want to promote before we wrap it up?
Well, so you can get in touch with me on Mastodon. I think that link will be in the description.
Yep.
That's the place I am.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your time. I really do appreciate learning more about kind of your journey with Swift and using the iPad even without a keyboard to learn. So,
yes, that's crazy. Don't repeat, please. Don't repeat my mistakes. Your life will be better with keyboard. But
it's cool to know that you, even without one, you could learn. You can learn, which is awesome.
Thank you, Tim.
Well, that's my interview with Martin. My thanks to Martin for his time recording this interview, and my thanks to you for your time and attention tuning in. As a reminder, you can support the podcast over at patreon.com/iPadPros or by subscribing in Apple Podcasts. My thanks to everyone that supports the show. With that, I'll talk to everyone again real soon.